those of you who are, you know, listening, and to people who will pay attention to passive recurring cash flow systems, do your due diligence. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, that you just go in, you know, half-hearted or, you know, without any level of speculation, but really just open your mind up and really focus on the goals that you're trying to create. And then think about what you really want for your life financially.
That was Kevin Jefferson. And frankly, my mind was blown in this episode. I've never really thought too much about foreign exchange trading. I just felt like you just needed to know so much about the geopolitics of the world and what was happening. And then I would always be behind because I thought the markets were so efficient. But like his discussion of prop tech funds and the opportunity to use other people's money and the fact that like the trades and the variances on a day-to-day are so small and like how all this stuff works together. I mean, this is a great episode. I think you should listen to the whole thing. And I'd love to get your feedback on the show and just see if this is something that you're interested in. But good luck. Listen to the show. We'll talk to you on the other side.
The limited partner shares in the potentially outsized returns of a well-planned and executed investment, but as a passive investor, and has the maximum leverage on their most precious asset, their time. And that is why we're here together. 90% of the millionaires out there built their net worth with real estate. However, 0% of the billionaires are hands-on managing the real estate assets because there simply isn't enough time. My name is Jake Wiley, and for the past 16 years, I've been investing in real estate, and I've learned a thing or two. But the most important lesson is how to leverage the expertise and time of others to maximize your investment potential. Welcome to the Limited Partner Podcast.
All right, partners, welcome. I think we've got a really special show today. Talking with Kevin Jefferson, and it's going to be a little bit of a different kind of angle. Normally, we talk about investing as a limited partner in real estate and, you know, potentially businesses. But today, we're going to kind of dive down a different path of foreign exchange trading, which I'm really interested in, right? The geopolitical issues across the world have created some opportunities and, you know, created some reasons to maybe push the pause button on some real estate. So I think this is an opportunity that's super timely, and I'm really excited to share. But to get this thing going, Kevin, thank you so much for being here.
Glad to be here, Jake. Thanks for having me.
Well, for, you know, my listeners out there, I know this is a little bit of a different topic. If you wouldn't mind, give us a little bit of background on you, how you got into foreign, you know, exchange trading, and, you know, where you are today.
Sure. So I'm Kevin Jefferson. I'm managing director for fmtrades.com, which is a currency trading platform where we actually educate traders on how to create passive cash flow, passive recurring cash flow through the currency markets. And a little bit about me, I've been in finance a little over 21 years, actually. I got into the business a couple of months after September 11, 2001. I actually was getting recruited to Merrill Lynch at the time to become a stockbroker. And so I took that challenge because I wanted to be in finance. And so I believe that when you're clear about what you want, there's really no bad time to go for it. And so even though the opportunity looked really bad from the outside because of what had happened recently, you know, obviously, and the markets were actually going down before that. So, you know, the timing didn't look great, but I just had to take the opportunity. So I went into production with Merrill Lynch as a financial advisor in February of 2002 and I had to build a career out of that. And so what one of the benefits for me, particularly, and really, I believe that it was a very direct connection, or at least very influential in my finding currency trading, was I had to get really creative about how I would run my practice. Obviously, nobody wanted to buy stocks when I came on as an advisor, particularly as a rookie. And so Merrill didn't care. They still had these multi-million dollar assets under management goals. And so they were like, hey, you either win or you get out. And so what I did was I was dialing for dollars. I was making over 100 cold calls a day. I was calling airline pilots, different people. And what I realized was one of the things that I loved coming up was business. And Merrill Lynch had a great business financial services platform, and they may still do. And so I actually leveraged that to call business owners who at the time had basically a similar dilemma to me, which is how do we continue to create cash flow in these economic times, right? And so I would call them about how would you like to look at a better interest rate on your line of credit? And that's not something that most financial advisors are calling you with. They're looking at to try to take your money and grow it. And one thing I learned about, you know, business owners is that they're very proprietary. They're very hands-on. And, you know, and I understand that because part of what makes them successful is their ability to actually go and drive results. And so that's why a lot of advisors sometimes have challenges with owners. And so I would just call them in the place that you know, where they lived. And nobody would not talk to me about how to get cheaper money, right? Because the cheaper your money is, that's a direct, you know, straight line to your bottom line. And so I leveraged that conversation to get in the door. And then we, you know, did 401k plans and other ways to defer money from going to the government and keeping it in their companies or even compensating their employees versus just sending it out, you know, in tax dollars. And so that approach really taught me what was important as related to being a financial advisor or really anybody who's consulting people and trying to help them get better. And that was really all you need to do is learn how to drive value. And so with that approach and kind of that mindset, my mind was open to probably more opportunities than most people because of the timing of my experience. And so when I left Maryland, I eventually went independent, started my own advisory firm in 2005. I took with me that mantra of, you know, doing the non-traditional thing. And so I found, you know, secondary life insurance markets. I was doing a lot of fun stuff that, you know, that people weren't doing. And in 2008, most of my clients saved millions of dollars because we were mostly out of the stock market. And so because we were doing alternative investments and including buying into, you know, doing some venture capital type stuff, angel investing, we actually, you know, we avoided a lot of the losses. And I directly attribute that to just having a mindset of being open to different possibilities and not just trying to force an equity portfolio down somebody's throat. And so fast forward 2008, CNBC had this thing called a portfolio challenge that they, you know, they offered for several years and I participated. And the goal was for you to pick a notional portfolio. They gave you $1 million of notional money and you're supposed to pick a portfolio and the highest performing portfolio from a return standpoint after a period of time, I believe you got $1 million or whatever. And I never got the $1 million, but what I did do was learn a lot about the markets and different opportunities. And in 2008, I think it was, they had the currency trading as an option or an asset class. And even as an advisor, I didn't really know much about that. But I do remember back when I was an advisor, one of my clients, Sid Hutchison, he was a retired tailor, sold his business to one of his apprentices. And we were at his house one day, filling out some paperwork for him to buy an investment. And he said, you know, I never saw anybody who had a trade, i.e. a skill set, that if they wanted to work, that they couldn't work. And that stuck with me. And so when I, you know, I saw currency trading, the only thing I knew about it in as an advisor was that, you know, we know how to, you know, be Billy philosophical, right? As an advisor, you're a great salesperson and you're really putting forth complex ideas and concepts and simplifying it for people. And that's a skill set and that's very important. But what we didn't have really was a tactical skill of actually driving returns or driving outcomes for the most part. And that was actually one of my personal frustrations with being an advisor because I'm a hands-on type of person and I really believe that if somebody's trusting me with their wealth, that I should be able to, on some level, drive those returns on my own and not just sit back and watch the movie like everybody else is watching and take a percentage of their portfolio just for being a spectator. And so fast forward back to currency trading, I tried stock trading before. I, you know, read books on it. This is, you know, in the 2000s. So, you know, the internet wasn't near anything what it is now. So I'd be at Barnes and Noble's, you know, learning about how to become a financial advisor, learning about how to trade stocks and all those things. And I realized that the currency game was more interesting. And so when CNBC offered the currency trading aspect of the platform, all I knew was that the euro was worth twice as much as the dollar. This is 2008, 2009 timeframe, right? And so I bought a lot of euro, not understanding anything about risk, leverage, anything of that sort, which is what drives the currency market. And so I just bought a lot of euro in this notional portfolio. And when I checked it about a week later, it had grown exponentially. And so I went and looked at what was it that I did that was so great. And it was the currency piece. And so they got me hooked. I opened an account and I proceeded to fund what would be tantamount to an Harvard level education in what I gave to the market, because there was not much training and education on, or good training and education on currency trading. And so I took that journey and I eventually found mentorship, paid several thousand dollars to fly out to the East Coast and visit with a gentleman who had learned how to trade from a market maker. And then he pulled the curtain back on, you know, wholesale trading and the market price structure and cycle. And once I saw that, I basically flipped from being one of the retail traders who maybe wins one out of three trades to now I win, you know, 7 to 8 out of 10 trades. And I was able to replace what I was creating in income through my advisory practice with currency trading. And so that's when I knew I had something. And so what the currency market is, for those who don't understand what it is, basically it's your trading money. So when you think about a currency trade, think about taking a trip, right? Let's say we're going to Mexico from the United States. And so before you go to Mexico, in most cases, you do what's called a currency trade. So you see the foreign exchange in the airport or you go to your bank or whatever. And so you take your dollars and you trade them for pesos. Why do you do that? The simple law of supply and demand. So, you know, the demand for pesos is greater in Mexico than it is in the United States. And so you get a better rate of exchange by doing it before you go. And so when you go, you enjoy yourself, you come back, whatever you have left over, you cash it back in for dollars. You basically take in what's called a round turn. So just like you took a round trip on a vacation, you take a round turn in the currency market. So when you buy a currency, you're simultaneously selling another currency. And then when you complete the turn, you do it in reverse. So if you bought a currency and sold one, at some point you have to sell the one that you bought and you have to buy the other one. And so that's how you make money in the market based on the imbalances in the value of different currencies.
Well, it's super fascinating. And I think that maybe it would be helpful if you explain, like, why are there these imbalances? Like, for example, why can you make money doing that? Because it seems like it should be a one-for-one trade, but we all know that it isn't.
Right. So people have been talking, people talked about the ruble. Is that the Russian currency? The ruble? See, I don't even.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm a guy who doesn't. That's how much I care about that stuff. Right. But there, every government has economics. And so obviously security and stability of a country is important. Their GDP and their ability to produce is important. And then also people's desire for their currency is important, which kind of drives the conversation where people are talking about the dollar, declining in value, which I personally, there's a lot of nuances to that, but a weaker dollar isn't necessarily bad for exports either. So there's give and take, in every situation, there's an opportunity. And so depending on a country's currency strength as it relates to the global economy, it will hold a certain value as it relates to another one. So the British pound will hold a certain value at a certain point in time versus the dollar will hold a certain value as it relates to the euro. And that's people's, first of all, their psychological belief in the power of the currency, but then the actual belief in how people are using and deploying that currency, even up to including employment numbers and so on and so forth. And so currency, like for a country, is very similar to a stock, right? And so the intrinsic value of that stock is based on what that company does with it and what they're doing to create value with it. And so those indifferences and imbalances, they're very minute, very small, but you can exploit those on and off again every day. And the currency market is, to give you scale, it's a more than $7 trillion a day market where it completely dwarfs the stock market and other markets. And so you don't have to do a lot to make a lot of money in it. So that's why there are imbalances. But let me kind of speak to why we use leverage in the currency market. So if you look at the dollar, no matter how much it increases or decreases in value, it's not increasing and decreasing in value by the tune of 3-5% a day or 10% a day. It's not even moving like oil prices do, right? When you look at gas prices, people look at gas prices to actually drive their buying decisions as it relates to filling up the gas tank. So if you look at the dollar and you look at any currency, there's no way that currency could actually fluctuate in any real way on a daily basis and allow the economy to continue. Because case in point, here in Texas, I'm in Dallas, Texas. Every time we even hear about a snowstorm, all of a sudden, all the bread and all the milk is gone from the shelves and all the stores, because that's just the rumor of the belief in scarcity. And so if the dollar did that on a daily basis, people would be scared to leave their homes and wouldn't be able to live. And so what you're trading in the currency market is maybe 1/1000th of a penny, so you're trading 5 decimal points to the right of a dollar of a penny. And then so the only way to make that worthwhile for an institution is you have to leverage that. And so why I like the currency markets versus even the equity markets, and you can trade, the strategy that I trade is it's agnostic to the markets. It's really about supply and demand. And once you understand price cycles, you can exploit any market. I've traded crypto. I shorted off of the 70,000 highs, put it on video. I shorted Tesla last April. I think it was between the week of April 15th and April 22nd off the 800 highs and told people where it was going. Caught it off the bottom, shared it with my little private group of West Point buddies who were asking me about Teslas because they're all fanboys. And so I told them where to buy off the 106 or whatever. And now it's up to 2-something. And so you can do this on any market. But the reason I like the currency market is because in most markets for a dollar, let's say the stock market, a dollar has to go up literally by 100% to become $2 in the stock market. And in the currency market, because of the power of leverage and because of the infinitesimally small lot sizes that we're taking and what we're trading, a dollar could literally produce or have the equivalent buying power of $100. And so if you have the buying power of $100, all that has to go up is by a factor of 1% to create that same dollar as opposed to 100% on a dollar in the stock market. And so just that in and of itself, although there's risks and you have to manage that, you can make monthly. Your monthly returns can be annual returns in most other markets. Even if it's only 6-7% a month, most people aren't making 6-7% a year, and maybe 15% a year. But, if you can do that in 90-120 days, I think it's worth taking a look at. So that's why, the imbalances in GDP and other things, particularly security, they drive the value. And then you exploit that through a leverage trading.
Now, a question I've always had is, is the currency market obviously isn't super efficient if you can do this, meaning that there's somewhat of a lag. So let's just say I want to move out of dollars, I'm going to move into pesos. Is there then an imbalance between pesos and like, you know, some other country like the franc or probably the euro now? I don't know what it is, but like, is it you kind of keep moving through the different currencies and finally work your way back? Is there a play there? Or is it usually you're just kind of doing a one-way kind of trade?
Great question. So because of technology, which is what's allowed this market to explode, you know, currency trading as it relates to retail investors, and you had to be ultra high net worth at some point, goes back to the 70s when, you know, there was, everything's decentralized. So it's computer systems. And so now the latency is so low with currency trades that you're literally taking trades in nanoseconds. And in my expertise is in really showing people how to take what are called swing trades. And so I don't, you know, for my members where we build passive recurring cash flow, where they don't actually have to trade for themselves, we trade on their behalf. We take a lot of trades that may last several hours to several days and some several weeks to several months, not very many several months, but we let them play out over time. And so you're not as concerned with getting in and out of a trade because you're looking at the fundamental structure and the soundness of that decision that you make. And it also actually helps you take higher quality decisions and it actually lets you take fewer decisions. And so if you think about it, the peso is going to be worth what it's worth versus any currency at any given time. And that's not going to change very much on a minute to minute basis. And so if you believe fundamentally that over the course of a day or week or even 3 or 4 hours, that value is going to change, and it doesn't have to be a lot, but let's say it changes by 20 or 30, what we call pips, but we'll call them points for simplicity. If you think it's going to move by 20 to 30 points, you position yourself at the front end of that. Take that 20 to 30 points, and then you don't have to worry about the value of it for the rest of the day. And so what I do actually to even drive that simplicity further is I only trade one currency pair, and I trade the British pound versus the Japanese yen, primarily because of it has a lot of what I call a large daily range trading range, which means that on any given day, I'll have an opportunity to take it because there's enough volatility there. And then the second reason is a lot of people are afraid of the British pound and the Japanese yen because they really don't know how to trade it well because they trade like retail traders. And so that keeps a lot of people out of it, which I enjoy. And then also, it's a little bit more predictable. The yen pairs generally move in tandem. And so you could actually be more predictive with it and actually have longer runs in trades and make more money. And I only trade one pair from a philosophical standpoint because, you know, although I can trade all the different asset classes, I've traded oil, I traded gold, I traded the indices, I put videos out on those things to kind of share with people how it's not much different than what I do. I only trade the British pound and the yen because it's really much akin to a relationship, right? You can date a lot of different people and you can get to know a little bit about each of those people. But if you really lock in and commit to one relationship, you start to not only learn the ins and outs of that particular asset or that relationship, but you start to predict and see what's coming before it even happens. And so that gives you a level of insight and superpower that you don't get when you're trading across the board. And so I really lock in laser focus on the British pound and the Japanese yen to drive my returns and ask me how many days I read the newspaper about the pound and the yen. Probably never.
Well, that's fascinating, right? Because you want to know, like, I guess we think about all the geopolitical issues that are out there in the world that are affecting, you know, the different currencies, the governments. How is it that you're making some of these decisions in a way that gives you the advantage, right? Because it sounds great. It almost sounds like too good to be true.
Exactly. So, and I love that. You know, I remember I was working on an app one time as a side note, and when I launched it, it was a trading app. And the person, you know, who was the tech company, it was a competition. And the only reason my app didn't win first place is because they had a question. It was like, is this even legal? Because it was a way to automatically trade. People would like, almost like an easy button for your trading. And so when I hear things about like, is it legal or is it too good to be true? It makes me excited because I know I'm on the cusp of something really great. Really, when you understand the technicals of the market and you see that supply and demand, and particularly in the foreign currency market, to your point, because every trade has a round turn, like when you take a trip with that money, when you take that vacation with that trade, you have to land back at home, it's very close to a zero sum game. So that's one of the differences in stock trading and forex trading is that you can buy a stock and bet on it to go up forever. You can short it and it's okay. But when you're buying a currency, you're actually betting against another currency. And at some point you have to take that trade back, right? And so what you do is you really position yourself to look at what the supply and demand imbalances are on a chart. And they show you where the market has to go at any given time. And I watched it, you know, people pontificate on these news events, NFP, you know, NFT, you know, non-farm payroll numbers, CPI, all that stuff. And I'm not saying that's not important, Fed decisions, but I could almost place a bet before the Fed chair ever says anything, and I can tell you what I think the market's going to do before he says it. And then I'll show you what happens on the other side of it before, you know, before I even know what they're going to say, to show you that it really doesn't matter what they're talking about. The market has already priced so much of that in that you just have to know what it looks like on a chart so that you can exploit it. So it's just like a real estate investor. You know, there are people out here, whether you're running your GPN a deal, or you're running a business, or you got people invested in something that you got going on. Of course, there are always going to be conditions that aren't favorable, as you know, for somebody. But ultimately, if you know what you're doing, you know what you're doing. You know, people who build houses, people who flip houses, people who do multifamily, they do multifamily. You know, people still have to live somewhere. And so as long as you understand what that means in a supply and demand cycle, you can exploit that. And so I just do it in a way that doesn't require me to add employees, overhead, or more of what I call the BS associated with being in business. And that's why I like what I do.
Well, let me try and like simplify this in a way. Let's create an analogy, right? So you brought up real estate. Let's use real estate, and we use like just homes, right? Because that's very simple for everybody. So when we talk about supply and demand, let's just say we're moving into a market and the supply is really low, right? So therefore, like the prices of the houses are going to go up. Now, in currency trading, as we think about that, like maybe, or let me go back to the housing analogy. So you move into a market, the supply is low, the prices go up. So what that does is then it also creates this incentive for developers to come in and put more houses in, right? So eventually, the supply expands and the prices either like stay static or they come back down. So that makes a ton of sense to me, is like you can look at that and say, all right, I see what's happening in the marketplace and I can make a bet on real estate based on that. So I think what you're trying to explain to me, and I'm hoping you can make this super clear, is like you're doing the same thing with currency.
Exactly right. So there, let's call those. So when you talk about housing supply and real estate, let's call these supply and demand zones in currency trading. And so there are zones where people are just not willing. You know, there's a point at which people say, hey, that house, I don't care if I've got $1 million in the bank, that house is just too doggone expensive, right? And so when enough people say that house is too doggone expensive, it doesn't matter how many houses you can build, because you can't sell any. And so the same thing happens in the currency markets. So when people are, let's just use the US dollar as an example, people are betting all the time on whether the dollar is going to go up or go down. And we all, you know, believe, just like with houses, there's a range at which most houses would get sold, right? As long as they stay within this band, there will be buyers and sellers in that fray. And so what it looks like in the currency markets is you have the fringes. So you have the high of a supply and demand zone, or of a price zone, and then you have the low of the zone. And so the high of the zone is where like the highest bidder was on purchasing the US dollar, which is the house, right? And then you got the low end of the zone, which is the lowest price that a person is willing to buy and sell it at as well on the downside. And then in between, you have most buyers and sellers. That's called the consolidation area. And so a lot of the buying and selling happens in consolidation, but the market makers, or the wholesalers in the real estate market, if you would, they're buying and selling on the fringes at the extremes of the values. And so because you're buying and selling at the extremes of the values, your risk is a little bit higher, maybe, if you don't know what you're doing, because obviously the values could continue to go against you. But generally speaking, when you understand that structure, you buy it on the fringes, you actually make more money coming back into the consolidation area where buyers and sellers are. So it's really, that's how you establish your edge, by understanding where the edges are.
Yeah, well, that's super fascinating, right? Because you think about like the opportunity, if you know what you're doing, but you just kind of got to know like where the wave is, right? And so I think what you're saying is right, that you actually can look at a picture, like a chart, and be like, all right, kind of here's the place, right? And I can either be over here or right over here, right? And I'm kind of focused on kind of buying at the edge, and then eventually it's going to swing
right
back, right? And it's going to go back and forth.
Exactly. Right.
Okay.
Exactly right.
Well, let's try and tie this into from an investment perspective, right? So most of the time on the show, we're talking about investing as a limited partner in a real estate deal, maybe a business, you know, it's kind of a long-term hold. How does that work in kind of the Forex market?
Great question. So what, you know, really it's about the creativity of the owner of the product, right? And so what I've done and what I've been successful at is really making Forex fun. I tell people, you know, when you've been trading for 15 years, you know, as I've been as a trader, it's almost, you've been in a relationship with it for a while. And so, you know, forgive the expression, it's a little crude, but I'm like, sometimes, you know, I need to put her in a plaid skirt. Sometimes I need glasses on her, you know? And so I create these different platforms to help people that keep me interested in it. And so the most recent platform that kind of aligns with the GPLP mindset, where maybe I as a trader and the general partner and my members of what we have, which is called the Cashflow Creation Club, they're the limited partners. And so what we do is we drive returns based on their belief in our ability to do it. And so with the Cashflow Creation Club, what we do is we allow our members to join us at their membership initiation fee. And then it gets them access to not only me as a trader, but they also get access to what we call prop fund money. There are companies out there called prop firms in every asset class that will allow professional traders to trade their capital as long as they abide by a certain set of rules. And so what we've done is we've actually set a structure to where our members can become a member, leverage our skills and our data, and then allow us to use our technology to build their accounts without them having to do it on their own. And so now it becomes more of a passive recurring cash flow play. And they're doing it actually in what I consider the best way, because we're allowing them to basically take a ride on an asymmetrical bet in their favor as best we can without them even putting their own capital in the market, because we use the prop firms to trade their capital as opposed to our clients. And so it's really similar to a GPLP deal in a sense to where maybe our membership fee is what the capital unit cost is, right? Most people are, you know, doing $50,000 units. Our membership is $15,000 for a year, and then it renews at 50% off. So $15,000, you get a year's worth of trading on a $200,000 account. And our goal is only to earn 3 to 4% a month. So if you're earning $5,000 to $6,000 a month off of a 15K membership, you're driving some significant returns without having your capital at risk. So we've set it up to where our members can passively gain recurring cash flow. And we work with business owners and entrepreneurs specifically for that reason, because I know that cash flow is always something that's ever present for them as a concern. And so we want to show them a way to do that in a very risk responsible and passive way that doesn't require any more of their energy, which is why people do limited partnerships in the first place.
All right. Well, that sounds super interesting. So I need to ask a couple of clarifying questions, because it really does. So you've got this prop fund that will let you trade their money. And how are they getting paid, right? So like, what is the return for them?
Great question. So first, we have to pay to secure the account, and we actually have to pass an evaluation. And so let's say they say your goal, you have to earn 10% on the $200,000 account. And so once we've done that, and I would tell my members, this should take us about 3 to 4 months to do that, because I'm very conservative. So 3.5% a month is maybe what I'm driving for. And once we pass that evaluation, the account goes live. And so now the money is live. And so before I get to how it works for them and their benefit, let me speak to how it works for them from a risk perspective. And so the reason they can offer this long term, because you're wondering, why would somebody allow you $200,000 to trade, you know, and they don't know you? So you pass it. They have what are called bumper guards on their trading. So they will only allow you to lose so much in a day, let's say 3%. And so you can only lose $6,000 in one day with them. Or they'll reset the account and say, you got to start over. And so you could be close to the 10%, and then you lose three. You know, if you go back enough, they'll start you over. So they've got a 3% low side and then a 6% maximum. So their real bet is $6,000 to $12,000 per member. And so they're not really putting the whole 200K at risk. And so that's where having a professional who can actually navigate that minefield, if you will, and build those returns in a way, that's why it's really important. And so what they get in exchange for taking that small bet is 20% of the cash flow that gets created. So every month that you have positive cash flow, or every week, actually, because you can take it out weekly, they get 20% and the members get 80% of the cash flow. And so that's what their model is built on, is piggybacking on successful traders to diversify their risk and also build cash flow passively like we're doing.
Okay. Well, that's really interesting. Yeah. I didn't really know that was out there. Okay.
Trying to think. That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, it's really access. You know, a lot of times it's just access and exposure, right? And so once you have that and you get creative, you can really do some really fun stuff for people and do it in a way that really doesn't put them at a lot of risk financially, which is a big part for me.
Yeah. No, and I think, like, is there downside protection from the members that says, like, you know, if you lose the money, you actually got to pay it back? Is that kind of where the LPs come in?
Excellent question. So this is as close to a doggone arcade game as you can get, because once you get the $200,000 account, it's not a credit check or anything like that, because it's a contractual arrangement between the member and the firm. And so what they say is, if we have these guidelines, these risk guidelines, and if you stay within those hard rules, we will allow you to trade as long as you want. If we violate those, the only thing is they stop the account and they say you have to pay to start over with us. You have to buy another account from us, because there is a cost with securing an account. And so for them, you know, they're in the winner's seat and, you know, every time. And it's not, if you lose the money, you're not responsible for it because they built it into their plan that, you know, they're never going to bet more than $6,000 to $12,000 on you at a time anyway. And so when it's, you know, you think about the odds when most, like, 1 in 3 traders is successful at best, maybe 1 in 10 traders, the odds are in the favor. They really have casino odds in a sense. And so that's where, you know, the experienced trader actually goes and exploits that and makes a lot of money for himself and his members. But, you know, most people can't do that. And so for them, they're, you know, the downside risk is really only, you know, your ability to get through the evaluation phase. But you're never on the hook for the capital. That's very important to mention. Our clients, our members are never on the hook for the $200,000. The two downsides of it from a risk perspective, I call, would be maybe performance risk. When I started running the DFY, which stands for Duff View Program, we started off, obviously, which we still have a vertical that is this. We have several hundred clients in this vertical because it's where we started, where people were putting their own money up, right? And so we're looking to grow that 8% a month because we wanted to double their accounts every year to give them real cash on cash returns. We wanted to be able to rival what they're creating in their business through trading. But once you go to the prop side, obviously you have to cut that risk in half, which is where we got to the 3.5% to 4% a month. But the difference is your money is never at risk. And so, you know, with the prop firm, you're basically saying, hey, I'm going to, you know, jump on this boat, use your money to build cash flow. On the other side, it's like, hey, we're going to just use our money and we put it, you know, we're okay with the risk that we're taking, but we're going to make more money. So somewhere in there, I think I lost my train of thought. What were you asking me?
No, I think your answer in the question is that, like, there seems like there could be some risk to the investors, but it sounds like it really isn't. The way they manage that is basically there's like a fee to get in, and like you pay that fee, you basically pay it back through the cash flows of the investment. And then in the event that fall out, they'll basically just say, okay, we're done, right? We'll pull this whole investment back. It took us whatever loss that was in there. And that's still less than the fee that you paid for it, which is fine for us as the prop fund. But you and the investor, like, you get the upside, which is to say you put your money in. And if you're efficient and you do a good job of it, you know, it's an 80-20 split. You get all the upside. And basically the prop fund gets a free trader, right? So they're not actually employing somebody.
Exactly.
They're putting you to work for free.
That's exactly right. And so the two risks with that from the Cashflow Creation Club's vantage point is performance risk. And so when we started the program a couple of years ago with people using their own money, the first year's returns were 21.48%. And so that was the worst year that we did, and purposefully, because I wanted to be really, not purposely doing worse, but I was being conservative with the trading strategy because I wanted, to your point, you were saying how, you know, it seemed almost too good to be true. And so we were like, okay, I want to run this in a way that doesn't freak people out, because some people have never seen their money go down by 10% in a month. And so even though you can drive 8, 10, 12, sometimes 20% months, like, people are always scared about the downside. And so I wanted to do something that was not very volatile. And so I only drove about a 2%, less than 2% a month return. But that was in the middle of COVID. It was in like 2020 to 2021 is when we launched it. And we did almost 22% in that first year. So the one risk is performance risk. Let's say we don't earn 3 to 4% a month. If we only earn the 1.78 or 1.89 or whatever that number is on a compounded basis, we still will have given you probably about $40,000 to $45,000 in passive recurring cash flow. And then the other risk is probably what I call opportunity cost risk. And so the prop firm allows you to scale up the account. Every time you grow the live account by 10%, they will allow you to double the amount that you trade. And so we go from 200,000 to 400,000 to 800, the 1.6 all the way up to $2.5 million in their trading dollars. And now you're moving from about $6,000 a month to about $60,000 to $70,000 a month in passive recurring cash flow. And so if we're in that $60,000 to $70,000 a month, which, you know, that's probably 18 to 24 months away, at least, you know, maybe 24 months away when you start, right? So I don't want people to be focused on that at the beginning. But in about 24 to 36 months, you should be at about $50,000 to $60,000, $70,000 a month in average cash flow. And so if we get to that level, then if we have a hiccup on that side, the opportunity cost of earning $7,000 obviously is quite significant. And so the time that you can't get back on getting back to that point, that's the only other risk. Aside from that, I don't see anything else.
I don't know. That's fascinating. Well, I'm glad we got to chat, because I guess too, you know, just keep thinking about the risk on the prop fund side is because these currencies, like you said, they change value so minutely, right? Like the ability to basically just be like, hey, we're done, right? Like this is not something like you see on the stock market where, you know, somebody does a bonehead move and the stock goes down by half in a day. Like that'll never happen with two currencies, right? Like, yes, it may start to drop, and then there's basically a point where you just say, okay, boom, pull the plug and get out of this thing. But you're doing that so fast that like the risk is minimized. So I get it. Like, that makes a ton of sense.
Right. Awesome stuff. So, you know, and this is for me why it's really important is because a lot of people don't have access to the ability to do that, right? And so you have to create a way for business, particularly business owners and entrepreneurs, people who, you know, are looking for ways to diversify their cash flow. You got to find a way for them to do that in the most, like the lowest risk and the highest return that you can. And the currency markets just give you that. You know, I mean, I'll take a trade. I took a trade yesterday, Monday, Juneteenth. Yeah, I took a trade on Monday. I shorted the pound yen. It took me the better part of like a day. I think it closed out this morning in profit. We hit our take profit and we made about, I bet no more than 1%. So we made about 1.5%, you know, so in about a day and a half, we make 1.5%, you know? And so, you know, I can do that 2 or 3 times a week and live my life. And our members are living their lives. They're running their businesses because they don't have the time or wherewithal to learn a new skill set. That's why we're looking for passive cash flow. And when we do have time, we're not trying to spend our time learning new stuff, you know? So I really wanted to really honor business owners and entrepreneurs in that respect to show them, hey, I understand how hard it is to run a business. I know how hard it is to grow a business. Most businesses don't make more than 400 grand a year, and they're very small and closely held businesses. And I've seen personally as an advisor how most business owners don't set themselves up for quote unquote retirement because everything is pouring back into their business. So this is a way for them to actually catch up on savings, a way for them to leverage money that may be sitting in the bank and really to leverage a small piece of what they have working, right? We're not talking about them putting 200,000 up, like they're putting up their membership fee and then they're just taking a bet on our ability to do what we say we're going to do, man. So it's just really a lot of fun just kind of being creative in ways to serve the people who really make our country go forward, I think. So,
well, that's awesome. So I got one final question, then I'll basically turn it over to you and see if there's anything else that you think we need to cover to make this episode complete. But from a tax perspective, so normally speaking on the real estate side, these are long-term holds. Because you're trading so often, is this all like active income or like what are the tax consequences here?
Great question. So the difference is actually different on this side than it is on what we call the MOP side, the my own principal side. So obviously when you're putting your own principal in the market, it's a different set of circumstances. And so, you know, you have different things that you can do. You can actually be classified. You get the trader's tax status as an active trader, and it actually drives down your tax rate significantly. You can write, you know, you can do a lot of offsets and things like that. But in the prop trading arena, it actually works in your advantage. Because now it's pure income, you know, that you made from providing a service. It's like contractual direct income. And so because it's that, I always encourage our members to consider, you know, getting their membership in the name of an LLC or a corporation or a business. And if they don't have one, to eventually get it to that point. And we even use self-directed IRAs, which is even more immensely popular because now you have in a traditional self-directed IRA, you've got tax deferred growth. But if you set it up as maybe a IRA LLC, so now you can actually control the capital that you're bringing in and none of it's taxable because it's just operating capital into the IRA's business. As a business owner, because it's straight income, now you have the same deductions that you would in any other business because you never put your capital in the market. You're actually just providing a service and they're paying you in the form of the returns in straight income for your service. And also the prop trading firms are out of Europe. And so they don't actually have a reporting requirement to the US. And so everything's self-reporting. And so the only thing that you need to account for is the income that you actually withdraw from the platform into your bank account or whatever account you pull it into, because obviously anything that comes into your bank per the IRS is considered income. And so, but when you do that as a business or some type of tax efficient vehicle like a Roth or a traditional self-directed IRA or 401k, it's really very easy to kind of overcome those challenges. But I'll also say, with that being said, obviously, check with your tax advisor for anything tax related, because that is not I.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make that clear.
I was going to say, let's do the disclaimer here is that, like, yes, there's definitely complex tax strategies involved here, but
sure.
Go do your diligence and make sure you talk to somebody. Well, is there anything, you know, else that you think would make this episode complete?
Well, I would just say, you know, the best thing I could offer to those of you who are, you know, listening and to people who will pay attention to passive recurring cash flow systems is, really just open, expand your mind, get beyond, you know, your own level of understanding. Let a professional, you know, what's that, the richest man in Babylon, where they talk about letting people do what they do. And just, you know, do your due diligence. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, that you just go in, you know, half-hearted or, you know, without any level of speculation, but really just open your mind up and really focus on the goals that you're trying to create. And then think about what you really want for your life financially, and then look at where you are and then say, okay, for me to get what I want, how much time do I have to get that? And when you have big goals financially, it's imperative that you collapse time. And the only way to collapse time in most cases is through leverage and through other people's expertise, because you need everybody working on your behalf at the same time so that you can get what you want. And so I would just have you consider alternative ways to get the returns and the outcomes that you're really looking for, and not so much the what it looks like or sounds like.
Well, thank you for that message, because that really is the point of the show, right? Is open your mind. There are other opportunities that you probably never knew of, and a lot of opportunities that most people don't even talk about. And, you know, going all the way back to the traditional financial advisor, I've always struggled with financial advisors, right? Because generally they're out there scrounging for fees, right? Like, if you're such a great trader, like, why do you want my money? What are you doing here? So there's an interesting incentive model there for traders that I've always struggled with. But with that said, I do like to end every episode with gratitude, because if somebody helped you out along the way, and it might be this gentleman out in California that they gave you the leg up, but I want to give you an opportunity to give somebody publicly a shout out to say thank you for giving you an opportunity.
Yeah. So I would say there's two people. Well, the actual person who taught me, Steve Morrow, he's actually out of Florida. He's out of Orlando, Florida. And that was the best $5,000 and plane tickets and all the expenses associated with that week that I've ever invested in my life. And so I'm grateful for him sharing his knowledge and allowing me to get piggybacked on what he's got going on so that I can have a 15 plus year trading career. And then the second person, he's no longer with us, was my good friend. And I call him a mentor, although he never accepted the title. My friend, John Carpenter, Dr. John Carpenter Dealey of the Dealey family. Most people know the Dealey family from Kennedy, you know, getting assassinated in Dealey Plaza. So that was his grandfather, George Bannerman Dealey. And he was a close friend of mine. He was the person who invited me to my very first mastermind almost 20 years ago. And it changed my life, because being connected with him and the way he saw the world is probably a good reason why we're sitting here today, because he expanded my thinking in ways that I never had thought to. So I'm grateful to the late, great Dr. John Carpenter Dealey as well.
One, I think those are great stories. And one I want to harp on is, you know, being willing to reach out to somebody that has the expertise. And I mean, it's kind of what we've been talking about this whole show. You know, you reaching out to somebody, paying them $5,000 to give you the leg up, like, that's so valuable. And then two, having somebody that had some sort of message that really did open your mind, because there's so much more out there from all of us if we're just willing to be open and listen. So I think those are great stories, and thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. And I'm grateful to you as well, Jake. Thank you for having me on so that we can expand the gospel of passive recurring finance, right? So thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for being here.
I hope you've enjoyed today's episode, and I'd actually love for you to contribute to a future episode. If you have a question you'd like answered, or a topic or a guest to bring on the show, please email me at jake@thelimitedpartner.com. Now, I realize there's a lot of lingo that's thrown around on these shows, so I've created a cheat sheet for you with the top 26 terms that come up most often. Head on over to thelimitedpartner.com/lingo for the list. Enjoy, and we'll see you next time.